Welcome to a transactional episode of Software Gone Wild, a podcast in which we discuss real-life SDN solutions and controllers that work in production networks. It's a dark autumn night in Europe, and some network engineers have nothing better to do than contemplate the transactional consistency of distributed network automation. I'm Ivan Pipelniak, blogging and publishing SDN rants at ipspace.net, and my first guest is new to the show, Donal.
Perfect.
Currently enjoying beer in Berlin. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. It is a dark and somewhat stormy night here as well. So yeah, good to be on. Good to say hello.
So what brought you to network automation? What were you doing before you discovered this new nirvana?
This panacea. Well, I guess my background originally was in computer science anyway. And then I spent some time around 2000 working inside Cisco, where they had quite a large network. Well, obviously a global network. And we used, I suppose back in the day, things like Perl scripts and, Tickle and Expect scripts to manage a sort of a large array of routers and switches. They also had a custom solution called Eman, which again was probably the best network management system I've ever seen to this day. And that's where I kind of cut my teeth a little bit on, I suppose, network automation. I suppose I wouldn't say SDN, but definitely in terms of automation. And then I kind of hopped around a little bit on storage and security roles in enterprises. And I've actually kind of transitioned into my own company recently, where we build templated wired and wireless pods for different organizations. So we haven't got to the scale yet where we need to do large scale network automation yet, but hopefully we will. And I suppose that's kind of my background. I'm a mixture of a network engineer, a storage and security guy, but very much a network engineer at heart.
And now is the perfect place to plug your company. So go ahead.
So we're a niche consultancy called Podomir, and we're trying to basically disrupt, I suppose, system integration a little bit with like services online and helping out the little guys. So kind of bringing enterprise engineering to sort of small to medium organizations, you know, making it more affordable with a better quality. And also we're trying to open source our network designs. So this kind of goes to the heart of, I suppose, some of the software-defined networking that I see in the future will be people sharing recipes and playbooks and hopefully more openly sharing designs and then just actually focusing on the execution. So that's kind of what we're about at the moment, I suppose.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's challenging. It is fun.
And my second guest is an old friend of the show, David G. from warm and sunny UK. How are you doing today?
Warm and sunny. Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. How about yourself? You okay?
I'm pretty fine. I had a mountain bike trip today and it was cold and sunny. So It was great.
Ah, that's good. No accidents? You didn't come off?
No, it was asphalt road all the way up and then a gravel road on the way down. So it was perfect.
Ah, perfect. That sounds nice. Yeah.
So, David, what are you doing these days?
Well, these days, I'm still recovering from network field day. I kind of got off the plane and I went back to work immediately, so I'm still feeling a little bit rough from that and gathering thoughts. In terms of work, I'm planning some Nexus migrations at the moment, and it's not very exciting, but a lot to think about, a lot going on. And I'm looking at Ansible to do some network migration automation, so things like MAC address purging, et cetera, as this is a live environment I'm currently working in. So, again, not particularly exciting, but a lot going on and little bitty bits of work. So, nice to keep me busy.
By the way, how was the network field day?
Ah, that was something else. That was excellent. I probably need about 5 or 6 hours just to talk about it.
We don't have that much time. So the short version of it.
Short version, one hell of a busy week. From the second you get off the plane to the second you get back on the plane, it's nonstop. You know, the kind of tech field day guys keep you busy. All the vendors though were fantastic. Lots of great information. And I'd expect a lot of blogs and kind of posts coming from the delegates that were there. I think probably highlights this time around. Probably Noir's Networks, they were pretty good. And some interesting stuff coming out of the likes of GigaMon and Big Switch. But again, really good week. So yeah, great stuff.
Perfect. Now, Donald, do you want to start the discussion? Because it all started with your tweet.
It all started with my tweet. Sure. So one of the things, I mean, yeah, the whole sort of software-defined networking thing, I'm still a little bit at a loss for the exact definition, and maybe other people are as well. But it really got me thinking about the not so much how well it performs, but more so around the failure modes and at what scale and where exactly does one apply certain levels of network automation. So I think one of the things that kind of, there was a back and forth between myself and David, and I just kept pushing this, you know, what about out of band? What about out of band? You know, what about default routes and impact, the impact thereof? So I'm very curious, you know, being somewhat of a, I suppose, paranoid, optimistic pessimist. So think of it as a sort of a security network guy as to what happens when things go wrong, as opposed to what happens when things go right. And I was just curious what you guys thought about, or, you know, if you had any either examples where, you know, your heart was in your mouth when you deployed a change, or, you know, where you think that SDN and network automation doesn't have a home or it is not applicable. Does that make sense? It's kind of like the failure modes or the risk angle that I don't think many people have covered.
Talking about risk, you ever changed an echo on an uplink on a remote site over a telnet session?
I have done that. I've also passived the wrong end when I was doing a change. And, you know, yeah, it's that sort of fear when you, you've locked yourself out and you don't have someone to go on the remote side or the satellite side to, you know, make a change via the console. So,
by the way, the best one I ever did was when my BGP feed wouldn't work. I just typed on a telnet session debug IP BGP updates without turning on off console logging first.
Yeah, debug IP packet.
Yeah, so I cut Slovenia off internet for half an hour or so.
Oops.
Yeah, that was in early 90s. We could still afford that.
So how is SDN going to fix that? How is network automation going to prevent something like that? That's what I'm curious about, like testing or pre-flight.
The optimistic answer would be that at least you fail consistently.
Or at scale.
No, I'm not joking. If you have a bug in the program, then hopefully that bug will manifest itself under certain conditions every time consistently. Whereas if you cut and paste, you know that we are all inconsistent. Hmm. So we'll at least get that part of consistency.
And I mean, it's a good point. And it's something that I suppose this idea of continuous integration or this idea of testability or test-driven development, that's something that I'm curious about. As you know, is it possible to improve the quality of the deploys as opposed to the, you know, the quality of the failures, and at what scale?
Mm-hmm. There are several aspects to this, aren't there, as well? So you've got things like accuracy of the kind of code that you're trying to push down into the devices or the configuration. But then between versions, you're obviously battling with deprecated commands or new features or things that have changed. So it's an interesting topic that the more you think about, that the kind of more it expands.
Well, there are two things you can do. The first one is you don't touch the physical devices. This is where the overlay networks come in. For example, in the data center, why should you ever reconfigure the physical network?
Mm, absolutely.
So once you get to that point where everything is virtualized apart from the transport fabric, who cares if something crashes? I mean, yeah, it's bad, but the impact is not that high. It's the same as if a server crashes or a hypervisor host crashes, which is a totally different story than if the core switch crashes.
Mm. Is this not a hierarchical conversation as well, in so much as you might want to automate, I don't know, something like load balance services, security services in a DMZ, but you might not want the same automation, you know, in the back end, or you might not want the same automation around the edge, you know, kind of around the satellite sites. So you kind of right tool for the right job, as opposed to let's automate everything and, you know, make a big mess of everything. Like core internet routers and everything else, you know, you might not want to use the same tool sets, or you might want to put some RBAC around there, or... Nice.
Well, you know, there is an interesting counterexample.
Okay.
NTT has an orchestration system, and they were talking about it at Nanox, so you can go watch that presentation, and PDF is online, and I'll include it in the show notes, where they effectively built the configuration for the core routers from their orchestration system. And then they just replaced the config on the core router. Bam.
Wow.
Oh. Okay.
That's hardcore.
Yes.
To say the least.
Yeah. But, you know, if you have redundant network, which you hope you do, because otherwise you're dead anyway when you experience a failure. If you have a redundant network, and if you're careful enough that you don't do this on two routers at the same time.
Ah, yeah.
Then you're good.
So this speaks to, like, David's point around, you know, where is certain level of automation applicable? You know, you say that you don't need to reconfigure the physical environment in a data center, and you can kind of play with the transport fabric. I mean, I would see that as being right in the sense that the data center is, you know, it's perfect for SDN as long as you're not, you know, introducing, you know, bad default routes or whatever. You can essentially kind of blast it and then, you know, reconfigure, roll back or roll forward. But one of the things that kind of worries me that I'm curious about is exactly what you described around either core routers or when you move towards the WAN or you move into that much more distributed, larger scale transport fabric where the risk is actually aggregated now and the accessibility is not the same. So like traditionally people would run, you know, different code bases, different versions, maybe, you know, you keep the configs pretty consistent, but once you bring in that kind of centralized command and control, especially with the APIs or different types of SDN, you're really looking at a monoculture, or you're really looking at having that common failure domain. So that NTT example, I was very interested about it, but until you actually said they just did one core and then they had the redundant core. I mean, they could have still sinkholed the traffic via, you know, a dodgy default, right? Presumably as well.
Well, you know, obviously they don't want to go into details.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
But I think that as I'm listening to you and a number of other people, and I will not name any names, it looks like we are stuck in this mentality of trying to prevent failures.
Yeah.
Whereas all the big guys are in the mentality of designing for failures. And maybe we should start looking into that direction. So instead of trying to make everything static and absolutely reliable, let's instead focus on what will we do if it crashes, because it will crash eventually.
Yeah. So, I mean, stepping into this conversation, we're almost talking about a kind of first line support mentality versus third line, right? We roll out a recipe which screws something up, the alarm bells go off, so then the third line step in, kind of do some magic in the background and put things back right again. Maybe it's that kind of approach.
I'm curious as well. I mean, can like level three actually roll back, or could they fix things? Ivan, you say that, you know, we're trying to prevent failures. If we were actually designing for failures, like take the Netflix kind of chaos monkey idea. Hmm? You know, they basically just randomly shut down instances across different zones.
Let me tell you one other thing. There was an ACMQ article, so people can go and read that. Amazon, Facebook, Google, and a few others, they randomly shut down data centers.
So, I mean, basically testing that anti-fragility kind of concept, right?
You know, they have a special team whose only task is to introduce failures. So they would just shut down the power in your data center. Now deal with it.
Right. And expect the services to come up elsewhere.
Yeah. And that's only way you discover where your real failure points and common mode failures are.
Got you. This is true. I mean, even with state, I mean, someone recently mentioned, you know, one device's configuration can be another device's state. So, I mean, that type of failure is just, it's gone, as opposed to a kind of, you know, malformed or a non-integral change, even if that was like propagated throughout the network, I suppose. So there's different types of failures.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting conversation. I mean, it could go one of two ways. You're either going back to Ivan's earlier point, you build a network for failure to handle that, or going forward, you say, okay, we're going to we're going to detect when something's going wrong and then look at the rollback stuff. And much to our kind of exchange of tweets, do you even look at building in via, the kind of Cisco IPSLAs or the remote monitoring probes in something like Genos, the ability to detect when itself has gone wrong? So you say, these tests are absolutely critical for me to declare myself healthy and working, and then give it the ability to, maybe roll back itself.
Well, obviously, ideally, this would be in your toolbox. How many people are doing that? I'm not sure.
I don't know of any. It's a nice idea, though.
Also, if we start thinking, as I wrote quite a while ago, if we start thinking about the network configs that we have to deal with, if we start thinking about them in database terms, so every time you change something in the database, you don't check the consistency of the whole database.
So more of a test-driven development configuration type approach than where you end up testing bits of the configuration?
Well, it depends on what you're doing. So if you are like all or nothing entity approach, where you just generate the new config and then you replace it, then obviously it would be nice to test that all the neighbors are up after the change, that all the services are up and so on and so on. And this can be done pretty easily. It's a lot of work, but it can be done. If you are in more granular mode, like what TailF is doing with NCS, then you effectively download small snippets of configuration onto individual devices that maybe modify a port behavior or a VRF behavior or adds a BGP neighbor.
Yeah, this is a conversation I've been having recently, actually, turning the network into a set of managed object kind of constructs where each object then can be almost updated in, not in real time, but updated via either API calls and kind of granular information passing between something like a network management station and the device itself. The one thing I do like, however, about the kind of rip and replace idea with the config is you can, generate that configuration and dump it down. All right, this is probably some automated testing to do. But then the coders can be quite lazy in so much as they don't have to start looking at parsing the information back out of the configuration to normalize it, to put it into a database. That's an interesting one. I think I remember speaking to, TailF just before they announced it got bought by Cisco on this. It's an interesting set of technologies.
So would that also then, that would create boundaries? So you mentioned VRFs and VRouters. That would stop like a failure from propagating too far, or it would be contained within, snippets or stanzas that only affect certain portions of functionality. Is that what they're getting at, or am I missing?
Yeah, well, that's the idea, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So the idea is that you change a service on a box, and then you don't test all the services, you just test that this service works as expected. And obviously you expect that adding this service will not crash other services.
So kind of a fault isolation you're separating it or segmenting it to ensure that it doesn't propagate. Do you think that it's possible to do more of that in terms of modeling? There used to be, OpNet Modeler that would sort of model the whole network. I'm curious if, people think that with more network automation, there can be more modeling and kind of pre-deployed tests done before actually pushing it out into production.
Well, you don't need OpNet anymore, I think, now that you have virtual routers available from every vendor.
So just spin up a sort of a test environment. One can't model the whole network, though, I suppose. It depends on the scale or the boundaries, I suppose.
Yeah, but even with OpNet, either you went for very coarse representation of the network. If you went in and actually did the packet tracing, then it was awfully slow.
Yeah.
They were able to do that, so they were able to simulate TCP sessions packet by packet and generate graphs explaining how certain TCP session would work under certain QoS conditions, for example. But that would be awfully slow.
Yeah, I've been looking at recently using something like OpenStack for this, kind of spooling up instances of NFV. But much to your earlier comment, Donal, it's one of those ones where you can't build model the whole network, and especially for guys like myself. I mean, I'm sitting here in a hotel room right now with my Mac. You know, it's got a limited amount of RAM. I just don't have the resources to spool up, you know, every type of NFV device out there. Or even if you just take kind of standard virtual appliances, you know, you just take something like a Bluecoat or a Palo Alto device or whatever. And building topologies is something else. So it's an interesting one for testing things like API calls. Or, you know, I've just upgraded my router from, I don't know, version something 11.x to 12.x. Are all my API calls still there? Or, you know, features haven't been deprecated? Or even if you're harvesting data from a network, you know, you could validate all that kind of thing. So instead of maybe not detecting dodgy configuration, detecting the things that you measure the network with, the metrics maybe aren't coming back right or something like that. So you could even test against integrity of the API calls, integrity of the data being received. It's one of those ones where it's a multifaceted problem, isn't it? The more you want to do some modeling, then you've also got accuracy of the thing you're kind of testing against, and you test harness almost, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just wondering if that's something in the future that's going to flourish, especially as people start to share, you know, the playbooks and the recipes, or even the tests in a more kind of community or open source methodology or model. So like people pushing stuff to GitHub. You know, traditionally, in my mind anyway, you know, network engineers and the industry, people have shared a lot via little sort of small snippets of code or via blogs. But I'm wondering if, you know, we can benefit more from that kind of open source mentality, and then people will have already performed those tests, or you could just, you know, grab down, like you mentioned Ansible and stuff, grab down those playbooks in advance, and they've been pre-tested against certain either like known default configurations or certain versions or certain, you know, firmwares or whatever.
Well, I would be very careful with that. Because, you know, grabbing a playbook from someone and just throwing it onto your network is like grabbing some random config of a Google search result and pasting it into your production router.
On the STDs, right? You don't want to be messing.
Safe computing.
Yeah, I just thought of something there and I've just completely forgot because I ended up laughing.
But there's room for, you know, to have some sort of standardized tests. And this is something that, I mean, when we deployed early, one of the first flex pods out there, so the whole sort of Cisco UCS vSphere on NetApp NFS-based storage. And one of the things that we were at pains to do that took a long time was the testing. And there was a mixture of either, I suppose, you know, issuing CLI commands and going through a checkbook or checklist and ticking things off. There could have been a little bit more, you know, bash sort of scripting, or there could have been more programmatic approach to the testing. And that's something, I guess, that I'd like to see more from, you know, this wonderful SDN future, is to maybe, you know, to tighten up the whole testing post-deploy, or to test for those features, or to test for those, you know, pre-flight, post-flight, because it's something I think everyone's been rolling their own. So, I mean, Ivana, I disagree a little bit in that, I mean, yeah, no one's going to change the configuration kind of ad hoc, but I think there's room for, you know, a certain flavor or testing methodology where it's non-destructive, it's not modifying, it's not adding, and it's not changing, but it's a kind of a, you know, a read-only, or it's a validation or a verification. So again, that's something that I see, that there's a lot of time lost, and there's a lot of room for improvement around the whole testing environment.
And guess what? There are, as far as I'm aware, only two vendors that are actually working on something like that. Well, maybe three. The first one is Cumulus. The second one is Dell. And the third one may be Plexi. Hmm. Now, isn't this sad? And everyone else is talking about SDN and That's controllers nice. And who knows what else.
And what's their approach?
I mean, well, Dell has something called Dell Fabric Manager, which is, it starts as an ordering tool. So you say, I want a leaf and spine fabric. So that is actually for building leaf and spine fabrics. You say, I want a leaf and spine fabric. I need this many ports. I need this many 10 gig ports and this much oversubscription. And they tell you, well, you need these switches for the spine switches. You need those switches for the leaf switches. And this is how you have to wire them. And then you order the switches, you wire them, they print the wiring diagram out so you can go and wire them. And then they generate the config files for all the switches, and you download that on the switches. And then they go and verify that there are the right OSPF neighbors and so on and so on.
They do that automatically? Is that a tool that you run locally? Is it hosted in the cloud somewhere?
No, it's an OVA you download or something.
That's interesting. So this is a bit like a PTM thing, isn't it? Where it just kind of connects and validates on your behalf instead of...
This is the other one. This is Cumulus, yeah.
Yeah.
Prescriptive Topology Manager.
Interesting. Donal, going back to your comment, earlier on, you're describing about the whole sharing idea. DevOps went through a similar movement, didn't it? And it's something that we're looking at. And in fact, it's something I've kind of been talking about a whole lot. Networking is one of these ones where there's more, I think, referential relationships in networking than there is in, kind of building and deploying servers and what have you. But one thing, I remembered what it was now, I was going to say earlier on, Spirent have their test cloud. So when we're talking about building a network end-to-end, you might even be able to say, connect up to somebody else's network and actually mull that in real time. Actually, I've got a couple of Cisco Nexus, whatever, and they're connected up like this, and I've got a whatever firewall upstream from that, and then actually run your tests against all that remotely. Because, how many enterprises do you work with that have their own lab or their own test equipment that even looks anything like their production network? So I don't know of many, if any.
No.
Totally agree. And even if they do, it's sometimes a bad representation, or it's hard to get time on it, or they don't reset them back to original configs.
Yeah. I think the line cards aren't the same. There's dodgy firmware versions everywhere. We've all been there and been burnt by it.
Exactly. I think sometimes training providers actually do a better job of that sometimes, because they have to run like large scale labs. But what you just mentioned in terms of the Spirit and cloud, I was just thinking like Junosphere and stuff like that. Junosphere, my That's bad. Cool. Like, again, seeing this with the commoditization somewhat, and that's what I think is really interesting. Maybe there will be services like this that will pop up in terms of large scale compute that will allow a sort of a heterogeneous model, or even a sort of a, even with confidentiality, you might upload some representation of your network, as it is almost, and then run some modeling or some testing, get the results and then be able to prove that. So not fears, but kind of pet peeves is around change management. And when I keep hearing the whole sort of SDN thing being touted, and then I look at the quality of code bases, I look at continuous integration, and I have some of my code, web developers tell me, hey, you just keep rolling forward. We don't roll back. And I'm like, oh my God, did you just say that? So I'm very interested in what the future holds for that in terms of the testing methodology to improve the quality and not necessarily to slow things down. Part of me thinks that it's a good thing that network changes are slow, because the network needs to be stable. But I suppose the one way to combat that is to improve the quality of the changes, and the outcomes.
Well, you see, there are two aspects to this. The first one, if we manage to virtualize things, then it's very easy to just tear them apart and rebuild them from scratch, which is what the web people are doing. That's why they can afford to move forward. Because if they do a mistake, they still have the old things up and running. So, you just reconfigure the load balancer and bam, you're back to normal. And you do another change, you roll that out, you change the load balancer, the new application crashes, you change the load balancer, it's back to normal. And we have to get to the point where we can do something like that, at least with virtual networks and network services. And then we can start playing with those ideas.
But, should we not be the pillars or the stable underlay, the original kind of network? Or, again, is this these small pockets of sort of highly malleable assets or resources that one can, shape, roll forward, roll back, modify and test? I still think there's this underpinning that there are some crucial components, or this is back to David's point about, where does one apply it, that there's still elements that are either off limits or are subject to much higher quality control or quality assurance, as it were, before, pushing out changes. I suppose it depends on business requirements and it depends on the domain or the services that are being offered. But I suppose, is nothing sacred?
Well, if you remember the good old days, we had the ATM or frame relay or optical transport infrastructure, and then we connected things onto that, right? Mm-hmm. And that infrastructure was sacred. So no one would automate that. And the problem we have today is that everything just merged into one. So we are doing the transport and the edge and the services and security and everything else on one box.
Yeah, that makes the kind of things like ITIL very important then, doesn't it? You know, it makes everybody get very shaky. You know,
yeah, no wonder it crashes. Wrong.
Exactly. It's all your fault, damn networking people.
No wonder you need ITIL and change management and change control because, you know.
Yeah.
Just imagine you manage to go back 15 years and you decouple. Is there any reason why you would ever, ever touch a core router that does nothing more than forwards IP packets?
I remember those guys being the big senior guy that sat in their own office and were very grumpy.
And for a reason.
Exactly.
But they were pretty stable then, I'm sure. Downtime was...
Take my favorite example. Typical cloud in an enterprise. And I was in Switzerland like 2-3 weeks ago, and I repeated my question that I ask every time. Does anyone in the room have more than 2,000 VMs? And I've seen like 2 or 3 hands, and one of them was from Swisscom. So that doesn't count. So you have like 2-3,000 VMs maybe. This is one rack with 2 top-of-rack switches. The next time you need more VMs, well, you may add a server or two, or you may add another rack like that. Now, why would you, with the overlay of virtual networks, ever, ever touch those 2 switches?
Yeah, so it goes back to the decoupling argument, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Keep the overlay and underlay completely separate. So, okay, let's throw an idea in here then. So this is something I've been pondering recently, especially with Brocade's recent announcement with the Open Daylight stuff.
You mean the lorem ipsum SDN?
Yes.
Well spotted.
Oh, God, my memory's awful. You keep making me forget things. Okay, so see if we can visualize this then. So if we're in a position where we have, let's say, an overlay network and we have some load balancers and some firewalls and stuff, and we wanted to push down some configuration, let's say we have layers in parallel. So we've got 2 load balancers, 2 firewalls, and some you know, servers on the end kind of, you know, serving up content. And we wanted to push out some new content. So what we could do is we could, say, temporarily get a controller of some description to push down, say, new load balancing rule and some firewall rules, and then get the controller to, let's say, if it's a virtual switches or, you know, some kind of VXLAN endpoint somewhere, to maybe push some test packets through that whole thing and then create like a packet list, something like that, for the control results. So you could do a search against the test traffic. And if it works, and then you move everything else back in line, and, you know, whether it's via OpenFlow or whatever, some mechanism to then push traffic through all the devices and push a config out to all the devices. Would that be some kind of acceptable test where you maybe lose, I don't know, forwarding capacity for a minute whilst you do some testing?
Now, would you have one load balancer or firewall for multiple application stacks or for one application stack?
This is okay. I'm kind of thinking this on the fly. So keeping things, let's say, uniformed and simple, and going what most enterprises who I deal with do, you have a pair of load balancers delivering multiple applications. So it would be one of those devices. So this is
that's
maybe
wrong. That's plain wrong. That's why you can't touch it.
Yeah.
Because if you crash it, you affect 100 applications.
Okay, so let's flip this around then. So then you add in, once you've done the decouple, you go, right, our strategy, let's decouple everything, and you have a load balancer per application and a firewall, you know, virtual firewall per application. If you do that, then enterprise costs go up, because obviously all the vendors like to make money somehow. So then does that then negate the whole decoupling process because the cost completely outweighs any benefit?
So you're going into a sort of an interesting area there where I think, you know, your model or your pre-prod or your dev test or whatever you want to call it is almost running parallel with your production environment. And then you're saying, yeah, it should be, right? But doing that, I mean, from a cost perspective, not everyone can do that, right? So in the same way that if you had like a VRouter or VRFs or VRF or some sort of boundary, you could have a certain amount, hopefully, of confidence that if you pushed a virtual parallel stack into the load balancers and, say, firewalls that David's talking about, that there would be minimal risk. Then you actually just be pre-testing your change in parallel. And like you said, losing a small amount of capacity, unless you obviously you DDoS not DDoS, excuse me, unless you DOS your services. Actually, that comes back to Ivan's point. You have to be sure that you're not going to hit some sort of underlying sort of hypervisor management process on the load balancer or on the firewall, right? So this comes back to this whole kind of, you know, containment and network function virtualization, I suppose. But Ivan, you say never, you know, you say you must have physical separation.
No. You're yet again thinking in one box running multiple services.
Shared services, hey?
No. Don't. Each application is totally separate. Yes, they have shared services. That's a different story. But, you know, if you work on a shared service, that becomes mission critical. It has different requirements. Well, you can't touch it or whatever.
Okay, so...
But you can touch an application load balancer or an application firewall because you only affect that application.
Okay, so let's put a twist on this argument. So let's say if we had a... Let's take a pod approach then. So this pattern's emerging, especially, you know, you take a big switch, you know, big bare metal fabric, or you take a whatever, you know, you take a closed network. The pattern's emerging out of these technologies. So let's say we've got a... DMZ network, and we're only bothered about automating bits of DMZ networks. That's where 80% of the changes are. And we could relatively easily replicate this. So we know there's, you know, vendor X firewall, vendor Y load balancer, some servers and whatever underneath. There's no reason why you couldn't then spool up some replica of the live configuration in something like OpenStack, drop in the current configuration, drop in the new configuration, send your test packets in and out, verify API calls, verify metrics you're expecting back, do your asserts. Once it's signed off, then drop the configuration out into the live.
Mm-hmm.
And then kill it and get your resources back. But then you need spare capacity, don't you need spare licenses to be able to do that.
So is this something then where the whole sort of commoditization and, you know, license free, and is this why some of the larger vendors are scared shitless when they start, you know, looking at, you know, Linux or actual, you know, the software eating their proprietary services in that regard, because they start to see revenue potentially dry up. Because if you can just get like a, you know, a generic box and, you know, load it full of RAM, you know, get it really, really high resources and then just model or simulate, then you don't have to buy as much for like, you know, model or, you know, test environments. I mean, to me, that would be definitely one benefit would be to have a better model environment. But by doing that, you've got to somehow bring down the requirements of the current, not bring down the requirements, but you've got to somehow lower or commoditize or create, make more generic patterns and more generic, I suppose, hardware and more generic operating systems such that they can then be loaded into these model environments. And then you free yourself from licensing, you free yourself from, you know, custom ASICs, you free yourself from a certain amount of the hardware requirements.
Okay. Now, Donald, first thing to keep in mind is that most of these appliances don't have any custom ASICs.
Okay, so it's all
just open one of those and you'll find Intel Insight and Intel 10 gig NICs. I mean, there is some glue in most of them, and it's usually a Broadcom chipset that they use to spread the load across multiple CPU sockets so that every socket gets consistently the same flow so that you don't have cache misses. On the licensing front, there are stupid vendors, greedy vendors, and smart vendors. And at least F5, I think, is one of the smarter ones because they have at least some products where you can license the bandwidth.
Yeah. Yeah, the big IP, the VE.
Yeah.
You can get that in different bandwidth steps. Yeah. And I think it's also...
And the line rate product that they acquired, supposedly the licensing of that one hasn't changed. There, you license the aggregate bandwidth, regardless of how many instances you were running.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's a totally different business model.
Yeah, that's cool. They've changed the licensing, haven't they, as well? So is it now they've got good, better, and best, or whatever it is? So you get so many different modules all, you know, thrown in with different price levels. But this is what you're after, though, isn't it? You're after the ability to carve out bandwidth across applications, because it's what a waste. I mean, if you buy a 1 gig capable VM, or VM license, sorry, then you're running 10 meg, you know, at peak on a peak day. What's the point? You know, it's just a complete waste.
It's just a licensing issue.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to buy a 1 gig VM. I want to buy a 1 gig of load balancing.
You say it's a licensing issue, but it's an educational issue, isn't it, as well? You know, and we design networks to couple services together for cost savings. You know, if you take a switch, you could always argue, you know, that the ITIL guys go, you know, what are you doing? You're adding a VLAN on a switch. Oh, good Lord, if you mess this up, it's going to take everything down. Yet, to be able to do the things we're talking about requires a re-education of decouple, build things with an aim to, you know, isolate the failure domain to just an application. It's a whole different way of thinking. And then I think I'm now seeing more of the attraction between the really kind of high power compute where you've got, you know, 16 blades in 4U or whatever it is, and, you know, so many cores to deal with that in real, maybe like the Atom approach. You know, you don't need so many powerful processors, but you just need more of them.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So let's just start with the conclusion that the technology is there, we just need to educate people.
Yeah, that's a reasonable conclusion.
I like it.
Okay, so we managed to come to a conclusion today, which is good. So what are you guys going to do these days?
Don't know.
Well, for me, I've got to go back to Australia soon to visit some of my customers down in Oz, or in the Southern Hemisphere. I've got a wedding coming up soon. Well, not mine, but in Spain, and I got to visit my folks over Christmas. Other than that, it's getting my sort of head stuck back into programming, I suppose, which I've started to do a lot more of in the last, say, 6 months to a year. So that's what I've got lined up. What about you, David?
So I'm almost permanently working in London at the moment. So if you've got any listeners that fancy a beer, just give me a shout and I'm around some evenings. But also I'm doing a lot more programming, playing around with automation tools as well. So doing a hell of a lot more with Python. Ansible's quite big. But also I'm now picking up more open daylight kind of studies. And you know, with recent events with Brocade, it's an interesting one. But yeah, I'm still recovering from NFD8. I was half dead from that. So that's probably me in a nutshell at the moment.
So we can expect a lot of blog posts from you then, right?
I wouldn't say a lot. I try and go for quality over quantity. But
okay, so where can we find this quality?
So you can catch me and my work at ipengineer.net, and you can catch me on the Twitters, and it's at LSP42.
And Donald, where can we find you on the blogosphere, Twitter sphere, whatever?
You just check out Podomer. That's P for Papa, PODOMERE.com. And the same on Twitter, at Podomer.
Perfect. And I'm Ivan Pipelniak, and you can find me blogging at ipspace.net and occasionally tweeting as at iOS Hints. You want to know more about SDN, go to my website and start at ipspace.net/SDN, where you'll get links to SDN-related podcasts like this one. I just released a new book on the realities of SDN. There are webinars, workshops, consulting, and who knows? You just might decide that what you really need is everything, in which case you should buy the yearly subscription. Finally, if you like the show, do tell a friend, leave a review on iTunes, and do leave a review on iTunes because we still don't have enough reviews. And follow us at podcast.ibspace.net.